We're going to be using that screen over there, so if your back is to it or can't see it easily, could be quite difficult. You can't see. What will we do then? I will back issue. You okay?
Yeah.
You playing footy nowadays?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still soccer.
Okay. Are you a striker?
Yeah. I don't know yet, but I think I will be.
You know that Srila Prabhupada also used to play soccer when he was a young boy, football? Did you know that? And when he was a goalie. Yeah.
I used to be going until I lost my talent or something like that. Like,
oh, he didn't lose his.
My eye on the ball.
Mm. Prabhupada saw all the people running back and forth and back and forth and back and forth on the field. He said, I'll be a goalie. Now, if you put your back this way, okay. Now, but you have to have your face me also at the same time. Now, how are you going to do that? It's quite a puzzle, isn't it?
Look like this.
I can see you're quite the manager also. There you go. Now, why don't we put on the first one? This topic is... Now, there's two parts of it. We might get into the second part today, and tomorrow we'll move quickly on the second part. We're going to discuss illusion and reality. Now, we may get a little technical when we discuss illusion. And if it gets too technical for you, don't worry. Just be patient. Illusion sometimes can get boring. But reality, oh, so sweet. Okay, put on the first one. And Chaitanya Prabhu, you have to watch me a little bit so I can tell you when to move on. Yeah. Fluid reality and fixed absolute truth. That's the title of this seminar. And I spoke yesterday about the meaning of this very esoteric phrase, meaning that reality, what we think of as reality, is actually not reality at all. It's always moving, it's fluid. It doesn't have substance. Now don't pinch the babies, make them cry. Yes, I'm trying to help you. Who is that crying? What's her name? I can't see from here. Huh? Ananta Priya? Okay, little one. So reality, what we think of reality, we look outside, what we fill our day-to-day life with, and more than that, what we fill our minds with, it's always shifting and changing. And that type of so-called reality is actually, it tricks us. It's fluid. It's not actually real. Like when Duryodhana walked into the assembly of the great assembly hall of the Pandavas, and what happened to him? Because that was in the according to Vastu Shastra, in the very center of the hall is called the Brahmasthan, and there should never be water in the Brahmasthan. It has to be clear. So he walked into an area that was supposed to be. We're going to look at that, and you're going to have problems with your back and neck and everything. So he thought it was going to be solid and that water could never be in there. And when you mistake something that's watery for solid and you try to walk on it, what happens to you? You actually end up quite embarrassed and wet. And that's what the material world is. It's fluid. It's liquidy. But it presents itself as if it's substantial. I think Mataji Zaktrini was speaking something about this type of a topic also this morning. But on the other hand, the absolute truth is fixed, it's certain. Okay? Just the space bar. And there's four parts in this of different sizes, but this part will be about the fluidity of so-called reality. And yes, part one, that's what we're going to do now. Reality and our perception of reality. And the main point we're going to make here is what we usually perceive as reality isn't reality at all. Now this can be very disturbing when you think that something is really there and it actually isn't there. And when someone points that out to you, it's very disturbing because our whole concept of life, there's actually a technical psychological term for that called cognitive disequilibrium. When you're, has anyone ever heard of cognitive disequilibrium before? Yes. When your consciousness, it falls apart in one sense because what you think is there suddenly isn't there anymore. Your concepts fall apart. So this part that we'll speak of begins, it's part of the Uddhava Gita. We're going to use the Uddhava Gita as the basis. And the Uddhava Gita, what canto of the Bhagavatam is the Uddhava Gita spoken?
11th
canto, and it's a really long section. It goes from, it's like the Bhagavad Gita, but still longer. And the Bhagavad Gita, who does Krishna speak to?
Arjuna.
Yes. And in the Uddhava Gita, who does he speak to, Krishna speak to? I would have given you a subtle hint in there. Yes, it's Uddhava, yes. And this is just before Krishna departs from the world. And it's so long, it goes from, I think, the sixth or the seventh chapter of the 11th canto to the 29th chapter of the 11th canto, quite long. Next, please. And in the 13th chapter, which is, 13th chapter is actually quite interesting too, because it's just between obviously the 12th chapter and the 14th chapter. But it's the 12th chapter and the 14th chapter are the most intimate chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna reveals his love for the residents of Vrindavan in that chapter much more than he does in the Bhagavad Gita. So here, we're going to read and speak about as the basis of this presentation the 16th and 17th verses of the 13th chapter. And in these verses, the four Kumaras, how many are there in the four Kumaras? Oh, yes, you do. I'm very subtle in my teaching techniques today. Okay, I'm not even going to ask you. Yeah. There are four Kumaras, and they're so young, but they're actually the oldest sons of Brahma. And they're the most expert of jnana yogis. They're fixed in meditation and very, very powerful. But yet, listen to the question they're going to ask Brahma, and then when Brahma can't answer it, because the Lord had promised Brahma that you will never become bewildered or embarrassed. So when Brahma can't answer this question, the Lord himself comes as a hansa. What does a hansa mean? A swan. He himself comes in the form of a swan. Okay. So this is so Krishna is speaking this to Uddhava, and this is what he's saying. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Krishna.
Very good. Oh, you can also answer to it. Very good. We'll give you all credit. He said, once the mental sons of Lord Brahma, they were born out of Brahma's mind, out of his mental capacity. Namely, the sages headed by Shanak, they inquired from their father, who was the son of Brahma's father? Who is the son of Brahma's father? Very good. Okay. They inquired from their father about the difficult subject matter of the supreme goal of yoga. Okay. The sages, headed by Shanaka, said, people's minds are naturally attracted to sense objects. The mind of everyone in this material world is naturally attracted to the sense objects. The Sanskrit of that is the tanmatra. The mind becomes attracted to it, and similarly the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. So this is the situation for everyone, and it's especially difficult for spiritual practitioners, that we want to remove ourselves from materialistic thinking, selfish, materialistic, sense enjoyment type of thinking, but our minds become naturally absorbed in the sense objects, and even if we close our eyes all day long, the sense objects are alive and well and flourishing in our mind. Practically speaking, as we shall hear about more about, we can't separate the two. The mind is in the sense object, and the sense object is in the mind, and you really can't tell where the border between the two is, where the mind stops and the actual object, the thing, begins. You can't actually tell. Next. So this is what they're asking. Now here we are, as the four Kumaras, where they were devotees, but their style of devotion, it was very much a jnana type of a style, of trying to separate out the mind from the sense objects and keep the mind completely fixed and still. And the impersonalists, this is actually what the impersonalists are trying to do. And this describes why it's so difficult. They try to make a mind that's free from all sense objects. That means a mind that's free from all sights, form, fragrance, touch, taste, and sound. Now, how can you even do that? You can't conceive of anything. This is what the impersonalists are trying to do. If we watch our mind for a few minutes, we see it just goes on and on with sound and form and thoughts and mental activities that all come from the sense objects. So you can't even conceive of a mind without sense objects, and this is why it's impossible to practice impersonalistic meditation. Meditate on nothing. Well, where do you begin? How do you meditate on nothing? So what the first half of what the four Kumaras said is the mind enters the sense objects, and not only that, but the sense objects enter the mind. Now how are you going to separate the two? And then the second part of what they said is, therefore, how can a person, and this is so important for all serious spiritual practitioners and for devotees, how can a person who desires liberation, a person who desires to not get entangled in the sense objects, he doesn't think that that's the purpose of his life, to enjoy indriyas, indriyas, yarte, to combine the senses and the sense objects, that's not his purpose of life. Who desires freedom from that liberation, who desires to cross over the activities of sense gratification, how can he such a person destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind, where they're so much connected with each other. So then they say, please explain this to us. How can we do this? Is this a relevant question? I think so. This is the essence of the question, out of the great struggles, the thing that we sort of can externally hide from everyone else. Is just imagine how when I make this example, so I say, just imagine how embarrassing it was if somehow or another a loudspeaker was hooked up to our mind. And everything that was silently going on our mind was broadcast to the world. And to make it 100 times more embarrassing, we wouldn't have a friend in the world. No one would talk to us. No one. We'd have to all get pet dogs or something like that. Or only people who couldn't speak the same language we think in. Or worse than that even, just imagine if there was a video camera too. You know, people would be being chopped up all over the place and everyone would see. Oh, he's such a nice person. they'd watch the video and hear the sound. So how can we do this? Is there a question? Separate the senses from the sense objects. Now, they have a mutual relationship with each other, and in fact, you can't separate them. You actually can't do it. And you can't tell where the mind begins and the sense object ends. What am I seeing here? Am I seeing some objective reality? Am I seeing this exactly as it is, or I'm seeing it how I think it is? What is this? When you see it, what do you see? A clip. But is that what it is? It's metal. And your mind, or my mind, and all our minds, takes the concept of a clip, or what's this? Cartels. So our mind takes a particular concept, cartels, and we don't even see the cloth that's there, and it overlays it on some particular object, along with our feelings about it. When some people see cartels, they think so wonderful. And if there's a little baby, and you take the little, we won't talk about that. But you know, you take some food, some baby food or something like that, and the little baby sees it and is so happy, and an adult sees it and says, is not attracted at all. So are they seeing with the same eyes? Well, they're certainly seeing with different minds, and the whole history of the world is and all the conflicts of the world are basically based on this. Because people see things, the same thing, with the same eyes, in the sense of everyone has two eyes and they're seeing in that way. But because their minds are different, one person sees it and thinks one thing, and another person sees it and thinks something completely different. If even on the simplest thing, where you couldn't imagine an argument taking place, but I've seen this because I take quite a lot of photographs, and I sometimes go on to photography forums, and someone will go on and say something about a new camera, the MD3, that's the Canon MD3 that's just come out. And someone will just say something about it, then someone will agree, and then someone will say something the opposite about it, and then they'll start fighting. And then they'll say, oh, you're, and they start calling each other names. And if they were there in person, they'd probably start beating each other. And this is over a camera lens, not even religion or the most popular topic on if you're riding on a train in India in a compartment, What does everyone always talk about? Of course, you eat all day long. But then what else? What do? You talk about the government and the politics and how they're all corrupt. And people, over things where people have strong emotions. The same event is happening, but it's seen completely differently. Where does the event end and the person's mind start? You can't make this distinction. So they're saying, how can we practice our yoga? How can we practice our yoga, jnana yoga, where we're meditating and remove the sense objects from the mind? They're always there. And this is the four kumaras are the gurus of the jnanis, of the process of the teachers of everyone. And they're asking this question. So here's the meaning of that part. The mind and the senses are so unconnected that these greatest of jnana yogis are inquiring whether or not the senses and the sense objects can be separated. So if they can't be separated, that's a great problem for us. As we find out when we sit down to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, or we to chant our japa, and it's like turning on it's a rerun of everything we've done. Over it could go up to our whole life. And I told this person that, and I told that person that, and next time I see that person, and the mind, it brings us through such emotions. So we're telling at one moment we're telling everyone, you know, that they're all wrong, and the next moment we're feeling completely miserable because we can't do anything right, and we're. This is all the wild mind acting, interacting with the sense objects while there are no sense objects even there. So this is a great puzzle, and how to deal with this great puzzle is the topic that the four kumaras bring up, and really that's the topic that we're going to discuss. Yes. So yeah, there's the question. Could you read the question, please? Aditya Prabhu?
Where does the sense object begin and the mind end?
Everyone understand this point? Yes. And then you ask, yeah, go to the next one. And then you ask, when the senses combine with the sense objects, what is the source of the pleasure? So there's some, what food do you like the most? Okay, good. Yeah. What prasadam do you like the most? Pizza. So there is some flour and some tomato sauce and some spices and some cheese and whatever, and some other things in there. And then there is the sense that enjoys the sense object, the tongue. So where in the interaction between the sense and the sense object, there's some pleasure. But where is the pleasure coming from? So we usually think it's coming from the sense object. But someone who's very ill, it's the same sense object there, but he can't get any pleasure from it. And what happens, and if someone doesn't like pizza, of course, there's no one in the world who doesn't like pizza. Because we view it differently. What to speak if it's someone who's in it, creature, a soul who's in an animal body who has a completely different sense, they may walk over to and then no, because it's cooked and they only like something that we may think abominable and terrible. So where is the actual pleasure? Is it in the sense object? When we try to enjoy something, all the different objects of senses? Is it in the sense object itself? Don't hit this one yet. No, don't hit it yet. Now you have to go backwards, see if you can do that. And oh yeah, we need the sound. Are we hooked up to the sound? We need a... You have to go backwards on it. No? Okay. But you have to go backwards. At the bottom, at the... Yeah, let's move it back a little bit. Yeah, go back a bit more. Yeah, okay. See what happens. Go back a bit more. Okay. Yeah, okay. What are these called? Yes?
Strawberries.
Strawberries. Are they good? Yes. Are they a good taste? Yes.
Sometimes.
Okay, oh, there's a disagreement. All those who think strawberries have a good taste, raise your hand. All those who don't like strawberries at all, raise your hand. No one wants to. Yes, okay. So where is the pleasure? Is the pleasure in the strawberry? Or is it in the sense, your own particular sense? Meaning the tongue, or is it in the combination between the two, or is it in the mind?
Mind.
Very interesting. Or is it a mind, if the mind doesn't have any sense object in it, is it pleasure? So these are very interesting questions. Okay, now we're ready. Now Prabhupada's going to speak on something that really makes this point. 1976, Mayapur.
I ask grace that in any condition of life where suffering is very, very acute, but the living entity who is suffering, he thinks I am that. This is how we have seen that the pig, its stool, when we see it, we say, what is that? He's eating stool. But he's thinking that he's enjoying. He's enjoying. This is the covering influence of Maya. Pratke Padmina Shakti. Otherwise, how one can suffer? The worm in the stool is enjoying. If you take one worm from the stool and keep it aside, it will again go to the stool. This is my Tatke Bhagavata. Avranatmitasam. God. Maya Sukhaya Bharavad Bhavato Nirvana. Kalyan Maharaj will speak and let us bow say. Surchi tato guna gacchi tasa maya sukhaya bharava bhato guna.
Didn't move.
Vaishnava's concern is, he sees everything. Just like any common man can understand what kind of bat nana jodi bhraman kare gadanja bhakhan kare. Very peculiar arrangement of the maya. You see sometimes in the airplane, in India, they're eating the intestine of the hog. Very India. There is a preparation called napi in Burma. That preparation is made. Every householder has a big jar at the door, and any animal dies, he puts it in it. It is the bad smell so strong, if once opened, that whole neighborhood will be polluted, bad smell. So they keep it for some years, and it is decomposed, the juice is coming. They strain the juice and keep it in water. That is called napi. And when there is some festival, they give little, and people so, nanajani bhavan kare, kadarjo bhavan kare. When my Guru Maharaj was alive, he had one, and temple, one of the in Burma demo. So when they were making puri with nice ghee, all the inhabitants will come. Oh, I don't know. But intolerable. The flavor of ghee was intolerable. And the killer flavor of Nabi. So Nana Jani Bhaman Kare Kodatya Bhakkhan Kare. Very peculiar condition. We are in this material world.
Yes. Very peculiar condition in this material world. Because the mind dictates what's the sense object that's pleasing for someone. That means, or that implies, that our enjoyment is actually not anything other than on the mental platform. Our enjoyment is on the mental platform. So what is it? We'll be speaking about this in the next part. What, why don't we just hit it one time? Let's see. Yeah. Yes, so this is actually a Shastra quote from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. One actually sees by the mind, and one hears by the mind, and we're all living actually on this mental platform. And the mental platform is not actually reality. We think that it's real. We think it's real, and we'll even fight over it. This camera lens is bad. This camera lens is good. I told you it was bad. I told you it was good. People are willing to kill over this. My religion says this. Well, yours is completely wrong. My religion says this. Kill each other over this mental platform. But the mental platform is one's concept of reality. It's not actually reality. Is the good taste in the nafi? No, it's in the peculiar minds of the people who enjoy that. So everyone lives on this mental platform, and the mind's nature is sankalpa vikalpa. It's always accepting, it's always rejecting. And they're thinking this is reality. So one thing, I accept it right this moment that I think it's most wonderful, or this person, and I have so many hopes in this relationship. And then something happens, and the thing that we accept, we reject. The whole advertising industry is based on this. They try to get people's enjoyment, increase it on viewing something on the mental platform. And then, on an impulse, they buy it. But there's no pleasure in the object. They even have a word for it. It's called buyer's remorse. There's no pleasure in it, but it's the anticipation on the mental platform of the pleasure that is the generator of the activity. So in our mind, we're viewing the world and we're seeing it as one thing, but the thing that we're seeing it as has nothing to do with reality. So there's what we perceive, and everyone is perceiving the world differently, and then there is what's really there. And the fact is that no one knows what's really there. Everyone is living on the mental platform. If you don't believe me that everyone is living on the mental platform and not living in the world, just one day, not in the temple particularly, but go out one of the streets, the main streets in Melbourne, and just look at people's faces. And you see, practically speaking, no one is there. You can see some people are walking around with big smiles on their face, nothing to do with walking down the street. And there's some people who are in really anxiety. They're in the mental platform about something else, and someone's on the enjoyment platform, and it goes back and forth and back and forth, and I'm going to tell him this, and some people are really angry, and some people's brows are like this and really furrowed because they're worried about something, but it has nothing to do with what's going on. It's the modes of passion and ignorance. And according to the modes of material nature that control us, we're living on one degree of the mental platform or another. This is what it means to be a conditioned soul. And this is what it means to be in Maya. This is what Maya does. It covers the soul and conditions him into thinking something is reality that actually isn't reality at all. It has to do with his mind. This is Maya's job, to get everyone living on the mental platform. Okay, I think. So that's the end of part one, reality and our perception of reality. Now, I was trying to make the point that there is a difference between reality and our perception of reality. You know, and our perception of reality is always changing, and it's fluid, and it's on the mental platform. And then the question is, what is reality, which we'll discuss a bit later, but no one, practically speaking, knows what is reality. Because I say, what's reality when I look at the cloth over here? So, what do I see? I see, immediately I see a bead bag. Because that's my mentality. When I see this, I see a bead bag. When some people see their beads, they think, oh no, I have to struggle again with my mind to try and listen. Some people think, oh no, now's a good time that I can, I've seen people, I don't even want to say, you know, they're chanting and surfing the internet and watching television. I know one person who is chanting like over 80 rounds a day, and most of them are watching television. But this isn't what we're recommending. But when they look at their beads, they'll see something different. What to speak of some little bug who likes to eat wood? When he looks at the beads, because of his mentality dictated by his body, he sees food. And the devotee, of course, sees nourishment, a different kind of food, food for the soul. But what is the reality? There's my perception of it, but what is actually there? Anyway, that's the question we're going to speak about. Okay, let's start part two. Anyone have any questions about what we just spoke about there? And maybe we can just open up two doors, actually, so we can have a little air coming in. Yeah. Anyone have any questions about that? Or does anyone think that they have a full concept of what is reality? Of course, for devotees, we all know what that is. Yes, question. Anirudhapu. That we'll hear about that. Where does the pleasure actually come from? It doesn't come from the sense object. It doesn't come from the sense. That will be the topic of basically the third. That's when the Hansa avatar answers the question. This is just the question that we're trying to understand, the depth of the question that they've asked. It sounds so simple, but it's very, very deep. It has to do with what is reality actually, and how do I perceive it? Now, I would like to mention that a lot of the insights that I have on this section and the pointing out the importance of this verse comes from a very dear friend and departed, though, godbrother, Sahotra, His Holiness Sahotra Vanacharya. And very brilliant, very, very brilliant person. And I've learned a lot of the insights that I've adopted from from lectures that he's given in a paper that he's written on this subject. So I'd like to thank him for that in your presence. Did you want to say ask something else or say something else? Well, that's that specifically to absorb us in something that doesn't exist is the business of Maya. That's exactly what Maya does. It absorbs our full attention, Isha Dvesha Samuktena, Dvandva Mohina Bharata, all day long, I want this and I don't want this, to the moment we die. Illusion. And then where do we go? So a very, very heavy topic here. And understand the power of Maya. Did you want to say something? Ask. Well, go.
Is this living on the metal platform related to living in the lower world's material nature?
Well, even in the mode of goodness, there's the hint of reality up to the point of knowing that you're an eternal soul, but it's not full reality. Because the mind is born of, you know, its mode of material nature, third canto of the Bhagavad Gita, it's born of goodness. So the natural state of the mind is goodness. Actually, the natural state of the mind is goodness, which means peacefulness. But we'd never know it from him. But that's it. And happiness. That's the natural state of the mind. But that's also on the mental platform, that kind of happiness. Yes?
Practically, for example, if someone pinches the body, then you feel pain. Or if it's hot, then you feel hot. So are you saying that basically, where the mind makes us identify with the body, and that's...
That we'll come to that, but yes, the two are so connected. That is exactly what Maya's job is. To make us, the mind, if we consider the mind, the false ego, the intelligence, and the citta, polluted consciousness, they're all really one thing, the subtle body. And in that, the false ego is the lord of that. And the false ego's job is to place our sense of self, who we are, the sense of who I am, on the body. Well, it's not actually us. And then, when we, just like if you're in a car and it's your car. Do you have a car yet? Raise your hand if you had your if you have your first car right now, first car ever. Yes. Did you get a new car? Okay. Does anyone have a new car? A new one? Yeah. And how long have you had it?
1 year.
Okay. So when you got it, did you get it? Did it scratch? Did you get it? Did it? Well, I won't tell her. But when you have a new car, and this isn't really for devotees, and you know you polish it and keep it so nicely, and then if someone hits it, you feel the pain. Because it's your car, it's my car. We call that a hung car. Well, that's what the false ego does. Because what it is I, and then when I gets expanded, the sense of I-ness gets expanded to something that doesn't have anything to do with me, it becomes mine. And then we feel the same pain as if it happened to me when we place the sense of I-ness or mine on something. So that's actually the situation with the body. But let's continue. here. Okay, number two. Now this is, we're going to, now after you see this, you're going to probably want to recommend to all your teachers that all your school subjects be taught in cartoons. Okay, fluid reality and fixed absolute truth. And we're going to have one more section on fluid reality. Is it properly? Properly means hands folded. Full attention. See, the difference between children, or one main difference between children and adults, is that children haven't learned the art of sitting properly, making believe that they're paying attention, and their minds are wandering all over the world. The adults have learned how to do that. But the children haven't, so when their minds go, their bodies start moving around and everything. But the adults don't, they forgot how to do that. Well, they've learned how to, the art of hypocrisy a lot better, practical hypocrisy. Because everyone's living on the mental platform. Just try to pay attention for like 20 seconds, and you'll see your mind will go, live somewhere else for a while. It doesn't want to live in what's going on at the moment, which is reality. That's due to the modes of material nature. That's due to Maya. So what is the reality that it's trying to avoid? That's an interesting question. But still, before we get to that, we're going to really enter an interesting, peculiar, and the word they'll even use is weird, realm of illusion, of fluid reality, the false sense of reality. This is part two, defining illusion. So what is the nature of this, the illusion that we're living in? Here is one definition of illusion. Perception, okay? Sparsh, you read this one very loudly.
Perception of an object that suggests a false belief as to its nature.
Yeah, it's quite a good definition. One recently, when I went into a doctor's office, and I asked him a question, you know, about health, about my body, or something like that, and he looked at me and said, Google it. So that's where this definition came from. Really? That's what the doctor said. He was from Agra. But it wasn't our Mahatma. Said, Google it. Well, where else do you find out anything nowadays? Google it. So perception of an object, when you perceive something, and what you perceive suggests a false belief as to its nature, what it actually is. What you, the object itself gives you a false understanding, the way it presents itself as to actually what it is. That is what Maya does, actually. And the technical Sanskrit word is upadankaran, the efficient cause or the ingrediential cause. This is Maya. So we're going to look at what illusion is and how powerful illusion is. People tend to accept reality as what they see. And basically everyone does that. Go ahead. But the Hansa Avadar presents quite a different view of reality. And we shall later... hear of an actual fixed concept of reality. We will hear about that in the next part. But it's not only the Hansa Avatar who presents this concept of reality that's completely different from what everyone is thinking reality is. And he presents also a concept of illusion. What is illusion? That shows that everyone is an illusion. Although if you tell people that they are an illusion, they'll get very insulted. But that is reality, that they are an illusion. But modern science, interestingly enough, presents quite a different view of what reality is other than what one sees. Because we usually take the standard of reality as what we see. But science doesn't believe that either. And now you have to pay attention for this because there's an exam right after this one. This is the proper way to educate everyone. It's called cartoons. Go ahead.
Well,
Oh, we need sound. We need lots of sound. Louder, louder.
To understand this experiment, we first need to see how particles, or little balls of matter, act. If we randomly shoot a small object, say a marble, at the screen, we see a pattern on the back wall where they went through the slit and hit. Now, if we add a second slit, we would expect to see a second band duplicated to the right. Now, let's look at waves. The waves hit the slit and radiate out, striking the back wall with the most intensity directly in line with the slit. The line of brightness on the back screen shows that intensity. This is similar to the line the marbles make. But when we add the second slit, something different happens. If the top of one wave meets the bottom of another wave, they cancel each other out. So now, there is an interference pattern on the back wall. Places where the two tops meet are the highest intensity, the bright lines, and where they cancel, there is nothing. So, when we throw things, that is, matter, through two slits, we get this. Two bands of hits.
This is quantum physics, by the way.
We get an interference pattern on many bands. Good so far. Now, let's go quantum. An electron is a tiny, tiny bit of matter, like a tiny wire. Let's fire a stream through one slit. It behaves just like the marble, a single band. So, if we shoot these tiny bits through two slits, we should get, like the marbles, two bands. What? An interference pattern. We fired electrons, tiny bits of matter through. We get a pattern like waves, not like little marbles. How? How could pieces of matter create an interference pattern like a wave? It doesn't make sense. But physicists are clever. They thought, maybe those little balls are bouncing off each other and creating that pattern. So, they decide to shoot electrons through one at a time. There is no way they can interfere with each other. But after an hour of this, the same interference pattern seems to emerge. The conclusion is inescapable. The single electron leaves as a particle, becomes a wave of potentials, goes through both slits, and interferes with itself to hit the wall like a marble. But mathematically, it's even stranger. It goes through both slits and it goes through neither. And it goes through just one and it goes through just the other. All of these possibilities are in superposition with each other. But physicists were completely baffled by this. So they decided to peek and see which slit actually goes through. They put a measuring device by one slit to see which one it went through and let it fly. But the quantum world is far more mysterious than they could have imagined. When they observed, the electron went back to behaving like a little marble. It produced a pattern of two bands, not an interference pattern of many. The very act of measuring or observing which slit it went through meant it only went through one, not both. The electron decided to act differently, as though it was aware it was being watched. And it was here that physicists stepped forever into the strange, never world of quantum events. What is matter? Are waves. And waves of what? And what does an observer have to do with any of this? The observer collapsed the wave function. So
simply by observing.
Now, whether we can understand all the even presented in a cartoony way, the little bit of intricacies of this, the principles are quite amazing. According to these scientific principles, which basically everyone accepts, that first principle is that matter, is it supposed to, does it act like a wave or a particle? And whether it acts like a wave or a particle, and it can't act as both at the same time, but whether it acts as one way or another depends upon the observer. So who is the observing of something? In other words, going back to what we were talking about, the mind and the sense object. So the mind is observing the sense object. So similarly, the mind or the observer observes the particle, and depending upon the observer, will act, the particle will act in one way or another. So what is the truth? Is it a wave? Is it a particle? Is the nafi tasty or is the nafi not tasty? How do you separate the tastiness from it, from the object and the observer or the mind? How do you separate the result of the combination of the sense object and the sense, the nafi and the tongue, or the ghee and the puris and the tongue, and the sensation of this is really good or this is really terrible? Where does one part begin, the observer begin, and where does the actual object and the tastiness end? In other words, is there an objective reality? So the scientists, the more they study this, I'll read you just, this is the words of one scientist offered to indicate what he gained from this experiment, one conclusion that he derived from this experiment. We don't know very much about this universe. Science is not yet an exact science. Do they teach you that in school? That scientists don't know anything about what they're talking about? They can't conclusively say what is really there. Because when you think about it, every science is based on scientific experiments. And by the way, this is the only technical real part of the lessons. It's based on experiments. But when you take an experiment, and then you add what the scientists concluded, the quantum scientists concluded that the observer affects what's happening, then what is the use of a scientific experiment? If the observer is going to change the result, then what's the meaning of a scientific experiment? There is no meaning to it. So what can scientists say that they know if everything is based on their scientific methods, but they have the nerve to make these scientific propositions sound exactly like they know what they're doing, and the people in Maya just simply accept it. Next one. This is a continuation of what he said. As we study smaller and smaller particles in order to understand more about what we're made of, in other words, what reality is, we seem to find more things that don't make sense. In other words, the more that they study the realm of Maya, the realm of ignorance, the realm of shadow, the less they know. They're always trying to see we want to find out where absolute reality exists, the senses, and where does the mind begin and the sense object end. So they're studying this, and that the more they study, they get more and more into ignorance, and the less they know. And they've been studying this particular effect with the wave particle effect for the last 90 years, the best scientific minds in the world have been studying this for the last 90 years, and they know nothing about what it is, what the answer to this puzzle is, because they've reached the limit of what one can understand about reality. So you take a, if something can act as a wave, and something, and the same thing can act sometimes as a particle, and it depends on who's observing it, it will act one way or another, then one way around this problem, see, they're trying to figure out what is the absolute truth about this, what is the reality, is it a wave, is it a particle? But the most obvious thing is that there is some thing that it is that allows it to act as a wave, sometimes in a particle, sometimes, but we don't know what that something is. So they've come up, one of the fathers of quantum mechanics, his name is Niels Bohr, and in 1927 he came up with the theory of complementarity. And what that means is we can't actually understand what an object is, what a thing is, but because when we look at it from this point of view, it looks like one thing. If we use, because the experiment and the experimenter affects what you see. You following this? Anyways, at least one person is shaking their head. Two now. Because the experimenter affects what he sees. Just like when the person who was cooking in ghee in the Gaudiya Math, in the Tamil Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they were trying to make a feast that was so delectable, tasty, and the person from the local area who liked nafi thought it was a terrible smell because the person who's observing it is affecting what the result is. They're perceiving something completely different. So he came up with the concept, this Niels Bohr came up with the concept of complementarity, which means that we can't really say anything about what reality is, but we can take all our different experiments and put them one next to each other and they complement each other, and we add them up and we can say, well, reality is something like this, and this time it does this thing, and at this time it does this thing, and at this time it does this thing, and at this time it does anything. But what is reality? They actually have no idea. And this is the most finest mathematical theoreticians in the world can't pass this point. So, does anyone have an iPhone? Of course, everyone has an iPhone. Okay, trust me for a moment. Let me have your iPhone for a second. Now, does anyone have an MP3 player? With you? Okay, bring up MP3 player. Does anyone have a, what's that? iPhone. Okay, I'm collecting iPhones and MP3 players. And a camera? Cameras? Okay. Does anyone have, let's see what else in this one, a video camera? Okay, we won't take that one from you right now. Okay.
There's one in my iPod.
Huh?
There's one in my iPod.
This is an iPod or an iPhone?
That's the iPod.
Okay. There's a nano? Okay. Now, so if I look at someone has their iPhone, right? And they're recording with it. Right? And then someone who isn't from from a very primitive land, we can't even imagine where this primitive land might be in this world, says, oh, he has an MP3 player. I know. It's an MP3 player because it's performing the functions of an MP3 player. And then someone sees the same person with his iPhone, and he is taking one photo. And the other person says, you think it's an MP3 player, but I know it's a camera because it's acting like a camera. And another person takes a video camera. No, this is a video camera. But we also know, what's another function? Oh yeah, it's also a phone. That's right. Does anyone have a dumb phone with them, as opposed to a smartphone?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So someone says, no, actually, I've seen it. This thing actually works as a phone also. So this is a phone. No, it's an MP3 player. No, it's a camera. Who gets the camera back? But there's a concept of the actual reality of what this wonderful creation is. It is iPhone. That unites all these other concepts. So if someone never heard, whose iPhone was this? Okay, where'd you come? And whose MP3 player was? Okay. And whose, you get two, dumb phone also. Okay. So if someone, there's an iPhone reality in this that exists, right? Now if someone doesn't know about that, and he's taking the theory of complementarity and saying that this thing that he's holding, it's acting sometimes as this, and sometimes like this, and sometimes like this, and sometimes like that. But what stops him from understanding what it actually is?
Sometimes.
No. He's conceptually lacking. Did someone say that? But what is, okay, when he doesn't have that understanding, what's that called when you don't understand it? Ignorance. Yes, thank you. It's ignorance. It's ignorance. Lack of understanding of what reality is. It's ignorance. Or seeing reality for what it isn't. As what it isn't. And thinking it is something that it isn't. That is Maya. Ignorance. Of what the concept is. Well, we of course know that concept is Krishna, a person, not only a concept. But he is the unified field theory. He, the concept of Krishna, the person Krishna, unifies everything. So the scientists, by studying ignorance without the concept of reality, just become more and more and more and more bewildered, actually. And they're saying, we seem to find more things that don't make sense. The point is, this isn't even what I'm saying. The point is that nothing should be ruled out completely. So please be open-minded, my dear scientists, and don't rule out Krishna then. Because why shouldn't anything be ruled out completely? Because we simply cannot know anything for certain at this point. So this, to understand your own ignorance, is called what? To be enough self-conscious that you understand that your own ignorance, what would you call that? Humility, exactly. And if you insist, if a person insists that what I know, despite the fact is that I don't really know anything, but what I know is reality, even though I know that I don't know anything, that's such arrogance. So this fellow, this scientist, had this much humility, but once humility is tested, when you are presented with the concept of Krishna, then one can find out. And then the next step is what? When you understand, I don't know anything, and we come before the Supreme Absolute Truth, we surrender. So that's what humility actually means. It doesn't mean constantly thinking about myself all day long and how bad I am, and that's called neurosis or something. Like, it's a mental disease that we all have in Kali Yuga, thinking how bad we are all day long and everything like that. That's not humility. Humility means surrender to Krishna. Next. So here's interesting questions that I thought of after looking at these points. Not even scientists truly understand reality implies everyone is more or less an illusion. Next. And therefore, where did the illusion come from? What is so powerful that it can bewilder everyone, that enforces ignorance on everyone, that no one can understand reality as it is? And there's someone who's implanting that on everyone's consciousness. Where did it come from? Where did this come from? So I thought that was an interesting question to think about. Where did this illusion come from that limits our ability to understand reality? Because if you think about it, if I look at this, why shouldn't I see what it is? What it actually is? What's stopping me from seeing this, or this, or this, or this, as it is? Why can't I see reality as it is? And there's no one who sees it as it is, practically speaking. Why? Whose power is so great that it stops everyone without exception? Must be a very powerful, all-powerful. So that was one question I thought of. Oh, we just missed the last one. Did that automatically happen, or did you push the button? Yeah, we can start there. We can go through it again. Quick review again. Push the button, please. Interesting questions. Okay, go past that. Yeah? Next interesting question? Okay, and then the next one. Where did illusion come from? And now, so also the concept of illusion implies the existence of reality. Because illusion covers reality by definition. Next. So, just as the condition of being impure, if you say something is impure, therefore, that implies that there's a condition known as pure. So illusion implies that there is reality. And then, of course, what is the reality behind the illusion? And this is life's purpose, to ask, oh, did we just miss reality while I was talking? I think we did. Go back a little bit. We don't want to miss reality because there's a subtle hint of the reality behind the illusion. Okay, yes. Everyone is more or less an illusion. Who empowers that? Yeah, okay, go on. Where did illusion come from? We've been there. Yes? 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 What is the reality behind the yes. Oh, gone again. But we saw him for a moment. So lucky. And he's so beautiful and attractive. If we can pierce the curtain of illusion and see what the reality behind the illusion is, we'll be in a realm of ecstasy. Okay, next. What is the reality behind the illusion? We'll first discuss illusion and its effects. And later we'll discuss reality. So now we will discuss illusion. Different forms of illusion. Oh, wait, look at that one over there. It took me a while to pierce that. What do you see? Yeah, and there's also one big old man. And you see it all? All little pieces in there. And an old man too, and an old man big who's in, and the lady's his ear, and the dog is anyway, and that's his hand. And so this is all different varieties of illusion. Take that. So placing a soul in illusion, ignorance, including the creation of false beliefs and all everyone's beliefs in the material world, everyone's convinced it's reality, but they're basically false beliefs. This is the function of Maya, Krishna's illusory energy. Yes. In this regard, Krishna states in Bhagavatam 11:22-5, when philosophers argue, now this is one of the effects, we're going to be speaking a few of the effects of illusion in Maya, because everyone is seeing according to their minds, and that is illusion. Therefore, what's going to happen? When philosophers, this is Krishna himself speaking about one of the effects of Maya, or illusion. When philosophers argue, saying, I don't choose to analyze this particular case in the same way that you have, it is simply my own insurmountable energies motivating their analytic disagreements. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. So in other words, everyone has a different point of view, from philosophers to managers to economists to photographers to politicians. And this is all simply the working of Krishna's illusory energy. He's saying this. And they're arguing about it. Well, I think it's like this. Well, I think it's like that. And it's all just illusory energy. I think it's an electron. I think it's a wave. I think it's a particle. And I'm willing to kill you over it. This is all the realm of Maya. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the causes of the quarrels of such men who are disagreeing, Krishna says, are my energies, the potent functions of my illusory Maya. That is to say, the energy of illusion manifesting as each of those arguments, all the different points of view, Maya, Krishna's giving them their points of view by his illusory energy. As stated in the Hansaguya prayers, let me offer, that's in the sixth canto, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities. Acting from within the core of the hearts of all philosophers and every conditioned soul who propagate various views, he causes them to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing amongst themselves. So what's it called when you have, there's a group and you're sometimes agreeing with these people and disagreeing with those people? What's that called?
Quarrel.
Huh? Quarrel? But what's the practical thing that it's called?
Quarrel. Debate.
What does it come down to practically?
Team.
Fighting? Politics. You make you agree with the people who agree with you, and then you start about the people who you're talking bad things about them, having nothing to do with the issue. Just politics come from it. And then another issue comes, and the sides change, and you agree with this one, and this one's your enemy, and this one who's your friend before becomes your enemy now. This is all the land of Maya. All working by Krishna's external energy. It is all Maya. Yeah, next. Thus, the Supreme Lord creates in this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to a conclusion. And he's so powerful. And he's doing this to everyone. I offer my obeisances to him. This is the Hansaguya prayers. Next. So one effect of illusion, or Maya, is quarrels, arguments, politics. This is the effect of Maya, Krishna's own energy. Another basic effect of Maya from the 11th canto also. You know, anyone know this verse? Fear arises when a living, it starts, Bhayam Dhuti Abhinaveshitasya. Fear arises when a living entity, a soul, misidentifies himself as the material body. This is Maya. And it becomes absorbed in the external illusory energy of the Lord because of false ego. He's thinking, this is tasty, this is bad, this is a sense object, this each, I hate this one, I don't like this, this is my friend, this is my enemy. And then immediately, because of this absorption, abhinaveshita syad, then fear comes. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, so he's turned away, and then this happens, he also forgets his own constitutional, natural position as a servant of the Lord. Thus, this bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. So all the fear that we have, it all comes from being absorbed in the land of duality, in the land of falsity, in the land of Maya. Not seeing reality, in the land of ignorance. It's all on the level of the absorption of the senses and sense objects. The realm of ignorance. It's all on the level of the ignorance of reality. If one's consciousness is absorbed in reality, this isn't what happens. Next. So the other result is fear that comes from this. So quarrel, disagreement, and fear. One more effect here. Still more effect of Maya. Those states of existence, from the Bhagavatam also, that are conceived of as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, have no actual existence. This is so heavy, actually. This is just what Maya does. It covers. Just like you can't see my hand, doesn't mean my hand doesn't exist. But this very, very thin paper blocks your ability to see it. That's what Maya does. We can't see what is actually there. And what's actually there? Or we see things as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there's nothing separate from Him. And this is the first hint of where reality, the land of reality, that there is nothing separate from the Supreme Lord. There's nothing separate in existence from Krishna. It's not possible. Because all in existence rests upon on, and even if you're a member of a different religion, the same concept. All in existence rests on God, on the Ishvara, Parameshvara, on the Supreme Absolute Truth. If something existed outside of Him, then what would be the meaning of there would be no concept of the Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth. If something was outside of it, then it wouldn't be absolutely true. So this is the concept of Krishna that we have to offer to the world, or part of it. Next. So then, the next thing that happens is that when you see things as separate from Krishna, or the Absolute Truth, fear comes, quarrel comes, but also you see yourself as separate from Krishna. And oh, this actually is the most painful experience. And because we feel ourselves separate from Krishna, we feel ourselves separate from everything and everyone. And we try to keep ourselves busy, sort of intoxicated with always busy doing this and busy doing that and being involved in this family and that family affair, and going to, when you go after, you go to Bombay and you could start going to relatives' marriages, and you could be busy all day long, every day of the year, practically speaking. And then you get there's so much busyness in that and false connectivity that we forget the emptiness in the heart. That I feel separate from something that is essentially me. Some very most basic part of myself, who I really am, I'm disconnected with. Of course, when you're little, you're not supposed to think about these things. So, separate existence from the Lord, that's the reward of this. And then you imagine so many different activities. I'm doing so many important things. Like Prabhupada said, what's the difference between the dog running on four legs and the human on four wheels? Going this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, that way. And we call that advancement. Now we can waste time more efficiently, basically, just to eat and sleep. We have more sophisticated ways to waste our life. It's all Maya, separate, vision separate from Krishna. Falsely performing fruitive activities, thinking them to be the cause of future rewards and destinations. This is Maya. If I do this, I'm going to enjoy later and avoid this kind of suffering. Who doesn't think like this? Who sees in the realm of Maya in practical dealings? You know, here's my religion, but my life tends to be just square in the lap of Maya. So one result of this is isolation and frustration. Isolation and frustration, separate from Krishna. So this is the end of part two, defining illusion. Now, I don't think I dare at this point go on to part three. I think it's an overload, and there's no cartoons in part three either. It'll be too much for everyone. You wouldn't even sit here, would you, without a good cartoon? So we spoke about illusion. And tomorrow we enter the realm of reality and how to get there. How to lift this curtain of illusion that is so dense and thick that no one can, practically speaking, get beyond it. Just look around. Just stand in any city. Read any newspaper. Turn on any channel. How many channels can you get in Melbourne? Hundreds? Huh?
Over 10.
How would you know? They taught you that in school, probably. Okay. People, and there's so much choice of Maya out there. So much choice of Maya that one has to be so fixed and determined, actually, to not, as we say, be in Maya. You're in Maya, Prabhu. Yes, exactly the point. Because living in the realm of ignorance, of not seeing Krishna, is Maya. And he is the concept, the person, that completes everything. Okay, we'll stop here and ask if anyone has any question. Yes, Paul. Dad. But loudly, or is there a microphone there?
Let me hear. One is, you said that, Yeah, so the thing is, if there is nothing separate from Krishna, when we define Maya, or when, you know, hearing lectures from the various acharyas, we say Maya itself is a separated energy of Krishna. On one hand, we are saying there could be nothing separate from Krishna. Maya is a separated energy of Krishna. How can there be anything separate from Krishna? One,
yes.
The whole concept of Achintya Bheda Bheda, you know, that says we are one and different. How
yes.
can there be anything different? The third thing, what you said is, this is that there is one absolute reality and we have to get to that. If we are part of that reality, what does it mean to get to that? We are already part of that reality.
Yes.
What does it mean?
Yes. Okay, so say one again. Sorry. If you want me to remember it, I have to make sure that you remember it too.
The first thing was, like, when we say...
Maya is a separated energy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't say, we say the living entities. We don't say Maya is a separated energy. We say, what's the name? Bibhinansa is what the souls, the tiny souls are called. Separated means that we have individuality. And individuality means that we can choose tatastha shakti. We can choose to go this way into the land of Maya, turning our back on Krishna, Krishna bhule se jeev, anadya bahimu, or we can turn towards Krishna and be with him. Separated doesn't mean that we're actually fully separated, but because we're tiny, we have our individuality and freedom of choice. And it doesn't refer to the Maya Shakti as a separated energy. But Maya Shakti is a reflection of Krishna's internal energy in the material world. Krishna's internal energy is ultimately Srimati Radharani, Lakshmi Devi. And actually, there's one verse in the 6th canto, 19th chapter of the Bhagavatam that describes, listen to this, it's very interesting, that the bodies and senses of all the living entities, raise your hand if you're a living entity. Haribo! We're all one with each other. Funny. Hi, I'm a living entity. Pleased to meet you. So am I. But I'm an individual. Well, so am I. But the bodies and senses of the living entities that we have, the bodies that we're wearing right now at this particular time. It's interesting to think of the body as an earth suit. Just like, take this one off and put on that one or something, a red one, a pink one, a yellow one, like that. You know, we just put on another body. Insignificant. Material situation is insignificant, has a spiritual deep purpose. How attached to Krishna and detached from the realm of Maya and Maya's vision does one have to be to be able to do more than just give a class on it, and live it. And in a practical way, and add the practical way too. I remember when I first started chanting, I was in the university library and I was reading Bhagavad Gita. And I was reading the 18th chapter. And I became so excited, actually, by reading this. And it was where I was in upstate New York, it was so cold. There was snow on the ground, and it was so cold. And I thought, I'm not my body. And I just walked outside. And I was able, through my intelligence, to detach myself from the feeling freezing cold. And the next day I was completely sick. So not only does one have to have one's head in the clouds, one's feet have to be on the ground. How to practically apply the philosophy, not in a theoretical way, but in a practical way so that Krishna will be pleased. It takes depth, wisdom of understanding, vijnana. So that was the first question. Second question?
The second part was on the same lines, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva that we talk about. Simultaneously, one and different. if there is only one reality, how can anybody be different to him?
We're not different from him, but there's a curtain covering our consciousness. We've turned our back from him. That's not a good example. Yeah, we have our relationship with Krishna, and it can't be broken, exactly as you're saying. It's not possible for us not to have our relationship with Krishna. But it is possible for us to turn our back on that relationship with Krishna and forget it. But it's not possible for us to not have that relationship. Exactly the point. And the third one? Are you sure you didn't forget it? That was the third one. What was the second one? Oh, okay. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes. In the? In the what state?
In the pure state.
Pure state, yes.
The soul in its pure state, what is it dealing with others?
Okay. In the soul in the pure state, what are the dealings with others? So tomorrow we're going to talk about that, the in relationship to the absolute truth. When we are in relationship with Krishna, and because there's different varieties. But for a devotee, if you meant for a devotee who's pure, he's acting as a servant of Krishna always.
No, he said that the quarrel and all these things of Kali Yuga are effect of Maya, because there are differences in the mind.
Yes, yes. Oh, okay.
Differences in the mind.
Yeah.
So in case the Maya is not covering the soul, what is the, in the pure state?
In Goloka Vrindavan, here's our example. There were disagreements all the time. Do you know that? Did you know there were disagreements all the time?
No.
All the time. Because there, Krishna is there, and then and Padma comes, and she wants to take Krishna to who? Chandravali. And then Lalita thinks, no, Krishna must go to Srimati Radharani. So she does some clever trick. She sends over one of her friends and says, Krishna, Krishna, a great demon is attacking your calves and cows, the cows and bulls that are by Radhakund, Aristagram. You go there immediately to protect them, otherwise it's going to be a disaster. And Krishna says, oh, Padma, I can't go with you now. I have to go there. So this is a disagreement. But there is no what?
Maya.
There is no envy there. And the quarreling is just for the purpose of rasa. It's all, there's no false ego. I am not in the center. It's all for the pleasure of Krishna. This consciousness, actually speaking, is impossible for us to understand at this point. What would it be like to not have envy in my heart and not have jealousy? If we're not in that state, we can't imagine it, because it's not like 2 times nicer than it is now, or 10 times or 100 times or 1,000,000 times or 1,000,000,000 times. It's of a completely different quality. No envy in the heart, and just thinking of what is pleasing to Krishna. So in the land of Maya, no matter how nice everyone is acting, what's driving the action is selfishness, false ego. And in the land of Krishna, the land of purity, the land of love, prema bhakti, the land of Goloka Vrindavan, no matter what appears to be driving the action, it's prema. Love for Krishna is driving everything. So it is a different land. The quality is different. So what's it like there? So it is much nicer than here. How much nicer? Is it two times the size? We all know the story of the frog in the well. Is it five times? The ocean is five times bigger than my well? No, it's really big. It's really different. You mean it's 10 times bigger than my well? No, I'm talking about the ocean. It's huge. You mean it's 20 times as big as my well? No, you don't understand what you have. The ocean. You mean it's 100 times bigger than my well? Okay, take rest now, and then later we'll talk about it. Yes.
If it's okay with you, I would just like to summarize what you spoke, just to make sure I understood.
Okay, but summaries will wait for the end.
It's very quick.
Okay.
If I was right, you were telling us that we're completely bewildered, we can't understand reality. So we should understand that there is someone who's, because there is someone, something or someone preventing us from seeing reality, there must be someone behind that.
Well, we're looking for the principle. We're looking for the principle that encompasses all the different points of view that will make a harmonious reality out of the different points of view. And that principle is Krishna. And not only that, that what the scientists do is study illusion. So they try to separate, for example, the senses from the sense objects. Where do the senses, or rather the mind from the sense objects, where does one begin? And they spend their whole lives trying to discover the nature of the land of relativity. And one thing that we're going to suggest, and what Krishna really suggests, and we'll hear that tomorrow, and the Hansa Avatar suggests, is forget it. You won't be able to figure that out. You'll waste your whole life. And you'll understand, like the quantum physicists, the more you study and the deeper you go, you'll understand less and less and less and less and less. Your ignorance will simply increase. The more questions will be revealed to you. So instead of that, forget that part and study reality. Put your consciousness on the absolute truth.
So instead of trying to observe reality, we should hear from
pathology. Well, that comes, but we'll get to that. How about on the last day you can summarize? And then you'll get the whole thing. Because we want to put, and this is what Krishna is ultimately going to say. He's going to say, put your mind on me. And if you put your mind on me, it's not that you're going to lack understanding of this world. You'll understand it in its proper perspective. Because in this world, you see everything in relationship with me, and to see things separate from the relationship with me is illusion. So to see Krishna in all things, yomam paschati sarvatra savam chamai paschati, anyone know the rest? That to see me in all things, in all places, this is reality. And it's not, again, it's not that if we're thinking about Krishna and seeing Krishna in all things, we'll start walking into the walls and not be able to see this world, because that's impersonalism. But it's to see Krishna, because Krishna is reality. One won't be on the mental platform. One will be on the real platform, the platform of reality. So if you want to have a summary, you have to have the point about the mental platform in there. Because everyone is living on the mental platform, not in reality. And to not live in reality means living in ignorance. So everyone is in ignorance. That means in Maya. Any other questions? Thank you. Yes? No, impossible.
And we saw that different people perceive things differently because of the mind, like one sees and hears through the mind. But we also see that even not as a child or an adult, but even in our own life as an adult, we see some days we are quite favorable or we like a situation or a person or any sense object, but after a few days it changes because
yes.
of the mind, of maybe different modes acting on
the mind.
So
yes.
How are the three things then connected, the modes of material nature acting and the mind and the sense objects? Like, how do we see that connection?
Yeah, well, it's the modes of material nature that affect the mind, and that affects our perception. But there's a more interesting question which comes up tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you. Otherwise, no one will come. But to speak of being interested, you'll come with your sleeping bags. More interesting question, and that's why the Hansa Avatar, I don't want to tell you what we'll talk about tomorrow. But yes, if I forget, yes, make sure I say why he comes as a swan. Any other questions? But what? Okay. Do they say there are only 24 dimensions? Okay. But are they saying that there can only be 24 dimensions? Okay. So how many dimensions? So if they say right now we can see perceive 24 dimensions, no problem. Well, that's what the same thing they were saying there, but they've just shifted the paradigm. So there are 24, there are different dimensions, means different ways, different senses of reality to perceive. So we already know that's, we're talking about the same point again. What is the final, ultimate dimension? Because there's much more than 24, obviously, because the worm perceives one dimension of reality. Otherwise, as Prabhupada said, why would he think that the stool is a wonderful place to live in? You have to be in a really different dimension of reality to think like that. And even if you take him out, he wants to go back home. So really, and this is the, you could say the blessing of Maya, or you could say the curse of Maya. It's really a curse. But because we turn our back on Krishna, we all live in our own little bubble universe. We live in our own universe of mental platform. Everyone lives in their own little world, basically. So there's unlimited dimensions looking at it from that point of view, a non-mathematical point of view. Different ways of perceiving reality and different dimensions to it. So one person will perceive reality based on one thing and it will have less dimensions. Say an animal, like a dog is very, which sense of a dog is most dominant?
Smell.
Did you ever smell a dog? Well, you're lucky. So his concept of dimensions of reality is very, it's all oriented on that. And a bird, a hawk, you can just by the slightest movement of his wings, just stay, tail feathers, just stay aloft in the air, riding that, lives in a completely different dimension. And a group of termites, white ants, a different dimension of reality, but it's all within the realm of Maya, of ignorance. And what's the principle? What we're after, what's the principle that unites and combines all these different dimensions. So there's particle and wave, and there's this dimension, 24 dimensions, but there's unlimited dimensions, non-mathematically speaking. So the ultimate dimension is the Krishna dimension. And you talk about something that's inconceivable also. We talk about the Vaikuntha. How big is a Vaikuntha planet? How big is a Vaikuntha planet? How big is it?
Big.
It's really big. It's so big that you can't even measure its end. It's unlimited. It's infinite. So there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And each of the unlimited Vaikuntha planets are unlimited in size. And then you take Krishna Loka, which is not only unlimited in size, but it's bigger than the other unlimited Vaikuntha planets. What do you think about that? Well, we can't conceive it. Therefore, it's not only Beta Beta, it's a Chintya Beta Beta. The workings of all this are inconceivable. It's not that we can know nothing about it, but to actually understand... See, it's only Krishna who understands reality. He's the only one who understands everything. And we get our little billionth of a degree of reality, and we perceive that. And we think that's everything. And then you want to reveal to someone your great realization of reality, and then no one's interested. Because they have a completely different sense. So you say, no, it isn't. That's not what it is. When there's a car accident, and you ask 16 people what happened, you'll get 16 different opinions of what happened. And they did some kind of a study. It wasn't an academic study, but they found people. They studied in the court system in the United States. And they took all the people who were judged as guilty, and by DNA evidence, later they found out they were not guilty. So they took those people who were actually innocent but judged guilty, and they examined why they were judged guilty. And 75% of the time, it was due to personal accounts of witnesses that they were put into jail for. The people were saying, I saw you do it. This is the nature of the mind. Like right now, if I asked you what did you remember from this class, we probably won't be able to find two people, or maybe some, I won't say two people who remember anything, but two people who remember the same thing, practically speaking, unless everyone says, oh yeah, I don't remember anything, I better repeat what the last person said, otherwise I think I was asleep or something. But it's the mind, and the mind is floating around, not in reality, but in its own illusory universe of mental space. And Krishna knows reality. So the scientists will talk about string theory, which I don't know. Later you can give me a lesson on string theory, advanced string theory. But they're studying the realm of ignorance. And you can bet, although we don't bet, you can bet, that they will not agree with each other. And second, in 5 years from now, they won't agree with what they think now. Because they'll have more questions than answers. And yet they'll present it as if it's true. You have any questions?
No.
Why? I don't know. You did so well sitting here. Because I know, you know, this kind of a class is like the most interesting thing. But you did so well, and we are all proud of you. Are you proud of him? He did.
Are you proud of him? Are you proud of him? No, I'm really proud of him. Huh? You have a question, yes.
Well,
loudly. Or?
Well, I find that in different circumstances I react differently, like my personality kind of changes. So how do you explain, like, if it's all illusion, why am I responding differently to the same illusion?
Yes. Tomorrow. Ask me that one. That one's answered tomorrow. And it's the same answer that, to yours. That you, okay, I'll say it, you're not responding at all. The soul, who you actually are, is not being touched by the different material circumstances at all. When that soul, when you actually come awake, that's awake means Krishna conscious. Awake means awake to your relationship with Krishna and living in that relationship with Krishna and dealing with the circumstances of life from that central point of your relationship with Krishna in a natural and spontaneous way. Then you're fixed. Then it's the fixed absolute truth. Now everything is fluid and changing because we live in the realm of the mental platform in Maya. And we have, there's no center basically. I'm the center. Okay? So forget I said that, and I'll say it again tomorrow when it's time for that. Okay, let's end. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, His Amenities, will be taking us out for one serving, which gives you half an hour. So please relax and enjoy yourself. And please